Well, what happened, Miss? What? Tell me about it.
Heated. We just went till we thought we couldn't be caught, you know. And I think we reported that. And one morning we was up there and had good luck. The limit was then was three apiece.
Yeah.
Three for each hunter. And we had 12. right where the landing comes out.
Yeah.
We had a little, I'll tell you about what used to be the commissary up there.
Yes.
We had an ice box up there, and in wintertime you'd get a 200 pounds of ice and put in there. And it lasted a week. It's cold, you know. We got game and wanted to keep it. Well, we'd just go put in that ice box till we got ready to come home.
Mm-hmm. Dress it?
No, we just put it in there without being. We would never keep it overnight. Say, like, went hunting in the morning and was going back in the afternoon, we'd go put in that ice box. But I got the ducks in a crocus bag and started up and got about halfway to that house, and he'll stepped out no along and another game off.
Two of them?
Yeah. They was very nice about it. I had a borrowed gun. And I had never told me, well, it belonged to Billy Richardson. And my old gun, something got wrong with it. Beatty was talking to Billy one day, and Billy says, I got a pump gun if Tuck wants to use it. Tell him to come get it and keep it as long as he wants to. He says, I don't know either. Well, we got it, and it was in one mess.
Oh.
I don't think it had been cleaned up for years, but I cleaned up, and it was a good gun. Well, Beatty and me want to ask Billy if it's plugged. You know, you have to have your gun plugged where you can't put the three shells in it.
No, I didn't know.
Two in the magazine and one in the chamber. And I don't know where the best I can remember, I never put the three shells in it. But after he told us that we had violated the law, which we knew we had, he got checked our license and duck stamp, and he says, I'd like to check y'all's gun. I just went and got mine and throwed three shells out of it. Had two in a magazine and one in the chamber. He took them and stuck it back in. He said, would you mind loaning me another shell? I said, yeah, I handed it to him, and he jugged it right on into that magazine. I said, well, I didn't know that. And he asked to check Beatty's gun, and Beatty showed him he'd got one of the new automatics that's made where you can't put the three shell in. He said, now, he said, I can keep these ducks for evidence, or he says, if you'll agree to it, I'll give it to some charity organization. I told him I didn't care what he did with my part of him. And he says, if you're going to give it to charity organization, he says, I'm in charity. He said, no, wouldn't even let us have three ducks apiece that we were legally entitled to. So I heard later, well, my grandniece was a nurse over there in Jimmy Daly's office in Williston, and he carried him over there and gave it to them, and the nurse and doctors got to eat them as much as more than patient. But anyhow, before that we'd go hunting. Roger's a big tease.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, we killed so many ducks. And he'd say, if you could shoot worth a damn, we'd got some more ducks. And this day after long Carlos, he changed his tune. He said, you hadn't been such a damn good shot, we wouldn't have had a plan.
But Lord.
No, I reckon you can call it game hogs or whatever you want to. But here's the way I look at that thing. Just like fishing. Someday you can go two or three times a week and maybe have good luck. Each time you go and catch as many fish as you can eat. Mm-hmm. Well, the way I do, if I get more than I can eat, I'll butch them and put them in milk cartons and cover them with water and put them in the freezer. And they're just as good when you take them out like that as they are right out the water. Same way with honey. You may can go today and kill 8 or 10 ducks, and tomorrow you may not get nothing. One.
Yeah.
So I kind of figured to hit when the iron's hot.
But they won't even it up for you.
No.
Like that.
And now you have 41 days that you can hunt legally. That's a duck season. And you're allowed to kill 4 ducks each day if you can. But you can't kill none today and 8 tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
They don't count it that way. Which would be the same thing if you could kill 4 ducks and put them 40. That'd be 164 ducks. But you got to kill them so many, 4 a day. You can't kill but 2 wood ducks, 2 mallard ducks, and you can kill 2 wood ducks and 2 mallard ducks. Or you can kill 2 wood ducks, 2 bullnecks, we call them. Or you can kill 4 bullnecks. And I've asked several people, how many hunters do you reckon it is when the ducks are flying real fast? Who can tell which and what kind of ducks there is? I can't.
Yeah.
Now, I can tell a big duck from a summer duck. I can tell a summer duck from a bullneck if you're not flying too fast. But God Almighty, some of them things come in there whistling. And if you go and shoot, you don't have time to see if he's a drake or a hen or a mallard or some of what. If you go and shoot, you have to shoot fast.
So you could get crossed up just like that.
Yeah. And unintentionally, you mistake one duck and say, for instance, you had 2 summer ducks and another one flew in that fast and you killed him, thinking it was some other duck, and kill another duck, you would be violating the law.
Well, now, it looks like you and Mr. Rogers, both of you, could have managed with that game warden. He's just one of your neighbors over there.
They say he'll arrest his mother. She's just out of line. That's what I've heard. And if you tried to bribe him or anything like that, you'd be in trouble, sure enough.
Well, I know you wouldn't do that.
No.
But you could talk to him.
Well, Beatty was talking to a lawyer about it. And he says, shoot, he says, little old thing like that, he says, just go on and plead guilty. He says, the judge won't fine you near as much as my fee would be. We thought he knew.
Yeah.
We went up there and the judge called us up and asked us how we pleaded. We told him guilty. He stirred a little bit. He said, Mr. Rogers, I'll fine you $350. And he said, Mr. Mack, I'll fine you $250 and 5 years probation. Well, he caught me, the same fellow caught me one time before, but it never amounted to anything. He tried in county court and went up there. And what was the last county judge before caught
me? Mr. Mack, that airplane went over. The lawyer, start back with the lawyer. He plead guilty, it was keeping his fee.
Yeah, and said the judge wouldn't find as much as his fee would be. So we went up there and we pled guilty. And he fined me $300 and me $250 and 5 years probation.
What'd that mean?
that he couldn't go out of county without permission. And
hunt?
No, you could hunt right on in your own county.
Yes.
But you couldn't go out your county unless you had a...
That's all right.
A permit. No, permission, whichever one. I had a good probation officer. And I didn't stay under that, but a little over a year, I believe.
Well, did you talk to the judge?
Yeah. We didn't talk to... This Sam Carswell that Nixon appointed as Supreme Justice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I just heard today on radio, television, one, he was defeated.
Yeah.
He didn't get the appointment.
Yeah.
Well, when I first knew him, he's a federal attorney up there in the federal court. But everybody we talked to figured that that was unreasonable to fine him that much.
Uh-huh.
Well, now he caught some fellas over here. Cedric Smith was one of them. And I believe Dr. Evans, Billy Evans in Gainesville, and doctor. And they carried, that was in Marion County, and they carried to Marion County in the circuit court, or county court. And they fined them $35 apiece, which was reasonable. But Long told me, I can't think of that judge's name. Just before this, Cornell.
County judge?
Yeah.
And he was the one?
Judge Hires was the judge. Oh, he's the one that married me. There was another name there. And I know it good as I know my own name, but I can't think of it. Anyway, when Long don't do anything, but just write you out a ticket. And he says, you hear from the judge. So the judge writes you when to come up there. And when you go up there, Long is up there to file his complaint. The first time, it was my son and me, and he was just home on the furlough, and he was going to Malta, I believe. He was going to be shipped out the next day or two. I went up there and saw the judge and asked him what to do about it. He said, tell your boy to go on where he wants to go. McDonald, Judge McDonald.
That's right.
And,
oh, yes, yes.
So that day we met up there and Long was up there. And he said, asked Long what the charges were. He said, taking or attempting to take migratory birds from a motor-driven boat after shooting hours. You're supposed to stop shooting at sundown. And we were guilty of some of it, but not all of it. So the judge told him, he said, Long, he says, I don't think your case will stand up. He says, now you've already filed your complaint and you can't change it. If you do, might as well throw it out. He says, you said taking or attempting to take. That's where he made his mistake. If he'd have said taking and let us stood at that, it'd have been all right. So I said, well, Judge, can't we settle it here in your chambers and stay your trip and having to come back up here? He says, yes and no. He says, if I decide in your favor, he says, Long would feel hard. And he says, if I decide in Long's favor, he says, you might feel hard to it. He says, let's let a jury settle it.
Now, what was that? This is a different one.
This was the first time.
Oh, this some time ago.
So he told me to go to the sheriff's office and make a $50 deposit. So I went on and so I set a date. And time I walked in there and saw the jury, I saw one of my good friends on it. And so he read the charges and clerk did, I reckon. And just like I told you, taking or attempting to take. And he asked me if I had anything to say. I said, I'd just like to ask Mr. Long one question. If he was at the landing when he said he saw us shooting after shooting hours, and Long said no, and the judge said, I saw him. And he told the jury to go to the jury room and figure out what was what. They just went on in the jury room, turned around and come back. He said, it's not guilty. And the judge turned to me and said, go to the sheriff's office and get your money and go home. And then after that, Long said that, well, he told me, he said, now, if I don't get justice here, he says, I can take it to federal court.
Now, he's the game warden?
Yeah. But I don't think he could do that. After he let it go to trial in county court, he couldn't have it retried in federal court.
Don't look like he would.
No. But he said if he didn't get justice in his little old county courts.
And he said that?
Yeah. And he said if he had another thing, another case, he's going to take it to federal court.
Well, was McDonald, is he the one that soaked you?
No. Carswell. The little judge, let's see, he's some kind of judge in Tallahassee now. And Nixon appointed him to that Supreme Court justice. And that's got to be voted on, you know.
Well, now, who was it that fined you $250?
Judge Carswell.
Don't tell me.
Yes, sir.
Well, how did you get there? I thought he was way over in Tallahassee somewhere.
No, he was a circuit federal judge. He came to Gainesville and different places where they'd have federal court. Just like a circuit judge, you know, a circuit judge has got four or five different counties.
Yeah.
And they have certain days to have court in each county.
I don't see how that the federal court would have anything to do with just getting too many ducks.
Well, ducks are federal game. Not all wild birds. Ducks, turkey, geese. Now, I don't know about pheasants. And turtle doves. They claim all of them are supposed to be federal birds. And it's... Now, we have a little game warden. I reckon a county game warden. Maybe he has two counties. And then they have a federal game warden. So... I think deer is classed as federal stuff too.
So the county court doesn't decide that anymore?
No. Oh, it would now if a county game warden caught you. You'd be tried in your county.
Yeah.
But not federal.
Well, you'd rather be caught with a county game warden then?
Sure. Every time. Although, sometimes these county judges stick it to these fellas that kill these deer out of season or kill doe deers. They'll sure put it to them for that.
Do they?
Yeah. They'll fine you so much and make you buy a replacement for the deer you kill. And $250 to $300. Those deers cost like the devil, too.
Well, now, that's just recent. Let me tell you, I just been boiling a little bit. I had to go out and carry my car through the state inspection. That rear light has that glass or lens on it is cracked. I run into something. Doesn't hurt the light. It'll last as long as the car will. But they picked that up. That's an old car.
Yeah.
And nobody stocks a lens for the rear tail light of an old 62 Chrysler 300.
Yeah.
Why, they could telephone all over Florida and might not find one of those things. I can't make one of them. Well, it's not important. But what's happened is, it's not these fellows out there at the inspection. They are working under the highway patrol.
Yeah.
Now, I've had, I don't know what luck you've had with the highway patrol, but all my brushes with the highway patrol have been unpleasant.
Yeah.
To me, they are nitpickers. There's nothing important. Now, you see, what I'd like for them to do, I don't take my car out there just to get them to pass it. If there's anything wrong with it, I'd like to know it.
Yeah.
And I'll fix it. And what I'd like for them to do is check that pollution stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd do something about that if I knew what to do.
Yeah.
I'd pay money to do something about that. But you see, they are willing for me to run all over town and the junk car places and go down at Malden's glass place and see if I can get something for that.
Mm-hmm.
When it'll last as long as the car and it doesn't affect the visibility.
Your light still burned, but just the glass broke.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Now, that's the highway patrol, in my estimation, Mr. Mack.
Yeah.
That's all I have ever seen them do. Now, I never had trouble with the sheriff. Well, he's had trouble with me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've never had any complaint with the sheriff, the deputies, fellas like that. I've had run-ins with them, but I didn't have any complaint with it.
My son is... He works on the inspection in Jacksonville. He inspects all the inspection places.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it's the darndest headache you ever seen.
Yeah.
He says somebody will come in there and probably won't know about it, and after you tell him he don't know about it, they'll probably come in there with bald head tires or something. And Willis, if you look at it in the right way, if you've got slick tires on the front of your car, on the back even, it's to your advantage to yeah. buy good ones and put on that.
Yeah.
But he says he has the most complaints.
Oh, okay.
They'll claim some of the little fellas that work out at the inspection place, you know, he come in, they got a grudge against me, he just found these things.
Yeah.
So he put me in a little extra trouble. Well, now, that may be in some cases. I don't know.
No, I never found them doing anything like that. They're just tedious.
Well?
Just tedious.
I've got burrs to work on that old Ford out there. And the brakes. Before it went up there. I said, I don't want it. If there's anything wrong with it, I want you to fix it before it goes up there.
Yeah.
Well, he fixed it, and I saw me run around and put on the brakes, and all four wheels skidded a little bit. I thought that was good enough. We'd get it up there. Turn it down. We'll come back. Horace fixed it again. And he get it back a second time and turned down. So I told him, I said, now, there's something. It's you or somebody. And he said, well, you saw him the first time out of work. The game commissioner, I reckon it was, Ms. Zetra, said that. He told Albert, ask him if he'd like to put some out over on his place.
Uh-huh.
Albert said, no, the neighbors would just kill him up. And, well, I don't know. Unless a man is a real good turkey hunter, you don't get them things every time you go for them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
You ever have any other brushes with the law?
No. Well, way back. Now, I was in it, no, I wasn't. And I had a friend out here who was a barber. And right next door to him was old German. His son run a little restaurant there. And I thought that the world and all of it. Boy, well, the old man, he made tombstones and engraved whatever he might want on them. Well, there's two friends of mine and this barber, they were working there in that town, making very little money. And they wasn't making enough to pay no great big amount of board and room rent. So Harvey said, this barber's name was Harvey Bruton. He says, if you boys want to, he said, help me pay the rent. And he says, I got one double bed and we put another cot in there. And they had a nice big back room and a shower in there. And he said, we'll just go half on the rent. You boys can stay here and we'll go third on the grocery bill. Says it'll be a whole lot cheaper on everybody. So they agreed to do it. This old man Schaefer, he goes around and tells it. And Harvey run a free rooming house and a free boarding house. And Harvey asked him about it. He said, no, he didn't say it. Well, he told it again. I was out in the hammock and the nigger went to town. He come back out there and said, Mr. Harvey said you'd come to town. He wanted to see you. And wanted you to help him out a little bit. Well, I went in there and he said, I'm going to have it out with that old man. And about that time, this boy Henry Feast would come along. And he said, Henry, come on, go in here with me. I want a witness. And he had him a little blackjack. And went in there and he asked over me. He says, I heard you said I'd run a free boarding house and sleeping quarters. And the old man said, get out, get out, get out. He said, Mr. Schaefer, if you said that, you just told a goddamn lie. And the old man started back. He was behind the counter, and he got right to the end of it. He grabbed up a wooden mallet. And by that time, Harvey started working on him with that black guy. And I never touched the old man. And so he finally got around the counter. Harvey was a small man, and he wasn't very strong. He never could knock him down to that business. Finally, I told him, I don't think that's about enough. And Harvey turned to walk out, and he was 10, 12 feet from the old man. And he was bleeding pretty bad. And he kept telling him, get out, get out. So just as Harvey got to the door, he took that mallet like that and threw it. And I believe if I'd let it go on, it would have missed him. But I snapped that and just hit it in the oven and hit him right between the shoulders and knocked him out the door and across the sidewalk. But he never did go down. So I was standing there, and pretty soon his wife and it was the stepson. They come out there and they clapped their hand. He said he got just what was coming to him. Well, God, the next week, the boss come out there and told me, said, you got to go to town and give me authority to sign your name. I said, what's all this about now? He said, oh, they got a rigmarole started about you and old man Schaefer and Bruton and Feast. I said, well, go ahead and sign my name. So, come time to have a trial. And, of course, we had to go up there. Well, somebody got the word around old man Schaefer, he better not appear up there that day. Well, he wasn't up there, and so he just threw it down. But I didn't have nothing against the old man. I just didn't like for him to tell him tales on a friend, and he stayed around there for about a year after that, and then he moved out. He was hard to get along with. I never did have any trouble with him, but different people would tell me, if you want a tombstone made, and tell him what you want engraved on it, he'd make you a price. Then when you got it through, he'd charge you a little bit more. I never did have no business dealing with him. I went in there, that boy was a good cook, and I was batching, you know. I'd go in and order what I wanted to eat. It was good food.
Well, now, when was that?
Oh, Lord, that was before I was there.
Yes, yes. Well, now, did Slim get them scrapes?
No, not. Let me see. I don't think he ever got in to anything when he was here, except me having that little run-in. Oh, there was two fellas. The same Henry Feast and a boy by the name of Milton Harrell. I don't know why they got it in for Slim, but they decided one Saturday afternoon they were going to take him out and work. Oh, well, Milton had a car, and they asked him if he wanted to ride around a little bit, and he told him yeah. And somehow or another, he figured out. He had a pistol, and a lot of time he carried it, especially in the woods, where you might see a wildcat or something, you know. But he didn't have his pistol this afternoon. They got out there and stopped the car and got to talking. Bill says, I got to step out here a minute. And he always kept a real good pocket on. He went out and cut him a little club. And he said, no, I just got a feeling. You all brought me out here to work me over. And he said, you won't find a better time than right now. Come on. And they backed off and said, no. They didn't have no intentions of doing that. But they knew they were going to get in trouble if they did, because he'd knock the hell out.
And he could do it.
Yeah, he was a good man.
Well, now, at that time, you all were always scuffing and roughing it up. And
wrestling cows.
Yes.
And fooling with wild horses. And you got plenty of exercise.
Yes.
I'll tell you about the time we went over here to old neighbor, I reckon you'd call him, old man Jim Nixon. He had a kind of a outlaw horse over there. He'd threw several boys, and they decided they wanted us to take him and break him. And we went over there, there's three of us. And they had the horse in a lot, and we caught him. And it was a general thing, I'd saddle for Wheeler. And I asked him that afternoon, did he want me to saddle the horse? And he said, no, I'll do it. And he put the saddle on him, and that fella had a pretty good lot. And I snubbed him up to my horse, and he just had a neck rein on him. And turned him loose. By the fourth or fifth buck he made, Wheeler saddle and all come off over the horse's head. And I thought he'd jumped on him, and I jumped off with a lariat rope in my hand. I run up there, an old horseman on off, and I asked if he was hurt. He said, no, catch the horse. Man, we had girls and married women and all out there looking at us. And we caught him, and that time he put that saddle on there. And we had a homemade quirt. It had a steel handle in it and a wrist strap. And it come down to a small, and it had what we call three tails. He said, I'm going to give him the work. I don't think he'd spurred him much the first go around. He wouldn't try to make a horse buck. If he wanted to buck, he'd just let him buck it out. And he'd give him the work. And the horse couldn't throw him anymore. I didn't. And he said, how about herding him to the hammock? I'm going to ride him to the hammock. Now, it was all open wood, practically all open wood from over there. And he told the other boy to bring his horse. And I heard that horse, and he rode him from there to the hammock without a bridle on, just that neck rein. Of course, if he started going in the wrong direction, I'd get off to the side and push him back the right way. And didn't have to follow no road, just go through the woods. And when we got to the hammock, he was about broke. two ways, broke down and broke to ride. Right.
Now, what is that? When you say you snubbed up to him with your horse?
Like you'd have a light rope around his neck or a halt on him. You'd pull him up, pull his head up close to your horse, and take a dally around your saddle horn. Then he couldn't do much till the rider got on him.
Yes.
And all he did was release you.
Yeah.
Take the rope off.
You didn't have to wrestle with him, hold his nose or anything.
No. When you first catch one of those wild horses, you catch him with a lariat rope, and you snub him to a tree or a post, and he'll choke himself for a good little bit, and after a while, when he sees he can't lose, then he'll kind of give up. Then if we're going to move him anywhere, we try to put a halt on him. You're going to ride him in the pen, you can make a halt in a half a minute without your lariat, you know. Put that on him, snub him up the tree till you get the saddle on him, then just put that little neck rein on him. And when the rider gets up there, turn him loose, and it's horse and man then.
Yeah.
He can't. Well, always see it as a mistake to try to pull a bucking horse's head up anyhow. Because if you don't pull it at the right time, you can pull yourself off. When his head's going down, if you pull up on him, that has a tendency to pull you off forwards out of balance.
Now, you had some... You always had horses.
No. I don't think I ever owned a horse till after we was married, did it? I was always working with horses and around horses, but they belonged to somebody else.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But most of the time, after that, you always had a horse.
Yeah.
That you out on a good part of the time?
You riding? No.
It was about the time when you was climbing Bill and breaking him. Up in the field.
I didn't. Except when I was gilding cows, most of the time I was in the field plowing. And one time I was up here plowing a little old gray horse I had.
That was way back when we were first married.
Yeah. And they were running wild horses. And somehow they got off the lake and got around in here. Well, I heard them coming, not thinking. I left my horse there. And jumped over the fence to try to turn the horses back for me. When I did, my horse, he got scared and run away with that plow. Man, he was going in that plow and just sealing it. I just knew it was going to hurt him some way, but luckily it didn't.
I don't see how I'd keep from it.
I don't either.
Well, it didn't, and I remember my daddy said he was ruined, but
all three of my children would get up on him and ride him. That was when they were small.
Mm-hmm.
And when the last time he got sick, he come right up to the... We had a little lot off to the side of the house, and I let him out. Come right up to the front steps. And we doctored him, and finally got his kidneys to move and his bowels to move, and he went to grazing a little bit. Well, I thought he was all right, and I had another horse, and I caught it and went on plowing. Dinner time come, I decided I'd go see about him. He'd fed off around and went up there and saw me laying down. He was dead. I don't know what was the matter with him. I raised two of them when I castrated them. And I sold one later on. And I kept this particular horse there. I named him Sam. And I think he lived to be 27 years old. I did whip him one time. And I never could catch him only in the lot and get him in a corner and get him in the stable. And catch him, put the bridle on him, put a saddle on him, anything. Go out anywhere and get off of him and throw the reins over his head and he'd feed around there. He wouldn't go. But you couldn't catch him out in the open. And I tried everything, salt and sugar, but he didn't take to that.
Yeah.
He would have been a mighty good saddle horse, but Shaw worked him. One machine, two horse plowing and cutaway, and two horse wagon. He wasn't a large horse in it. I don't imagine the weight over 900 pounds. But he was a prairie horse.
What was a good size horse then?
Well, 1,100 pounds was considered a pretty good size horse.
Yeah. Around out here, you didn't need a big horse.
No. Especially riding in the woods. I don't believe a big horse can get around as active as a medium-sized horse. Back then, I didn't weigh quite as much as I weigh now, too.
Oh, it's so nice and quiet this time of day. I just hate to, you see, in a few minutes now, you see the evening will start, and I'll have to get to work. And the afternoon's over now, and I don't have to worry about that. This is a right nice time of day.
Yes, it is.
I
want to
tell you about my grandson, since he's in
there,
he can't hear me, because he doesn't mind on his
head. The reason I say that is, I love to think about it, a little fresh vegetables.
We had in pretty good shape. We broke it up and hired it. And then I got this little old tractor. I laid off my road and put my fertilizer out. Took some discs and threw us up a little bed, which was good without having as much rain as we did. And then I'd open up a little trench and plant my seed. And it'd come one rain right after another. Before it'd come up and after it'd come up. And I hadn't got old stand of cukes or okra. And got a fair stand of squash, but they don't look healthy to me. You know, when your land gets too wet and runs together,
and I
think it kind of sours too.
Yes. You know, over there in one corner of my field where I was cutting it up a little bit for some millet, It smells just downright sour.
Yeah, I know it does.
Is that you? Have you seen that?
Yeah, and these mud puddles up and down the road here when they start drying up.
Yeah.
Man, you can smell it. It almost smells like it's rot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, now that I don't know that I ever noticed that before.
Oh yeah.
What do you think it is?
Well, it's your land running together, and if you got any vegetation on it.
I see.
It's sour and it's rotting and fermenting, I reckon you call it.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't do all this hammock land yet good. Well, I don't consider a part of my garden as hammock land, but it's lowland and it'll run together. But up in that hammock where you got that clay subsoil, it's good about running together.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it. Especially in the wintertime or early spring, it looks like it takes it two forever to ever dry out. But, Lord, if you can have the right seed.
Yeah.
Like a fellow told Lawrence Robert about putting the fertilizer out here on this freshly chopped land we had. He says, the mother nature's good to you, so you come out all right. And that's about right.
Yeah.
I learned about planting on that low land up there. Now, what we call a new ground, at one time it was ditched and had lateral ditches and all. And then we'd go in there and break up our land, throw it up, make a bed, and get up there with a smaller plow and put our little planting bed up on top of that. And that's about the only and the safest way that you can work that land.
Now, let me see. Is that for this time of year?
for planting in the spring. You know, farmer, you used to plant two crops, truck crops a year.
Yeah.
Well, in the wintertime, you'd plant English peas and lettuce and romaine and anything that the cold weather didn't hurt. And then in the spring, you start with string beans and cucumbers and squash and... But Lord, that cucumber business, that squash business, there's too much work to that. You go together, and okra's another. You go together and cucumber, and if you got in the size patch at all, it's every other day.
Mm-hmm.
You leave one there that long that day, and if you don't get him tomorrow, or the next day, you're too big.
Yeah.
To get fancy stuff. I reckon it should be picked every day. But when you've got other things to do, you can't pick them every day.
And then you get so many, you can't use them yourself. You got
to... Yep, we try to grow those for market, you know, not for just home use.
You mean out of your garden?
No, when the farming, truck farm.
Yeah.
I had one little row down there last year. It wasn't quite an acre long. We're just starting bearing good, and youngest daughter wrote us, got us word some of theirs coming over the weekend. So I told Inez we'd skip a day and pass the regular picking day. And we did, and they got here and went down and we picked over a bushel of cucumbers off one little row. And then the next day we got over a half a bushel. And they had plenty to take home with them.
Yes, that's nice.
I don't care so much about cucumbers to eat.
Well, one cucumber will last a good while.
Yeah. But I got one son-in-law. I bet he'll sit down and eat a half a dozen at a time. And he just a pig about them.
How's he eat them? Just
peel them and put salt and pepper on them and eat them. And we take them and peel them and slice them up, you know.
Yeah.
Put a little vinegar and maybe salt.
Yeah. But he don't need to do that.
No. You go in the field without any salt or anything and eat.
Uh-huh.
I told him one time I'd rather have a hog in my field than him.
That's cucumbers.
I don't care what it is. If you go to the store and get it, it's not as good as you go out in the field and get it. My son, he come out the neighbor. I had a nice tomato patch that year. We'd go down there. He'll never will forget. He said, Dad, that's wonderful. I'm going to go in the field and get your chow fresh. I think most of they had a refrigerator or canned tomatoes. Well, I like good canned tomatoes. We can quite a bit. And string beans, we don't can. Well, she does can some of those too. But
you freeze them now.
Hmm?
You freeze them now.
Yeah. And she's got some.
You used to can them.
Yeah. Everything was canned. Because you didn't have refrigeration.
Now, squash is about as much trouble as cucumbers.
They you got to pick them every time you turn around almost. We used to plant those old zucchinis. There was a green squash. And then the cocoselles. Well, both of them were real fast growing. And I have picked them off, see, like earlier this morning. You see one about that long. You'll say 4 or 5 inches. And I take me a stick and stick up right even with it, with the end of it. And next morning, that son of a gun will be 1.5 inches past that stick. That's how much they grow overnight.
Yeah.
Well, a day and a night. Sure grew fast. Yeah.
Now, you eat some in it. You ever burn out eating them?
Oh, I never did eat too many squash because I don't like them.
Don't you like them?
No, you can take those little zucchinis and let them get a little over fancy. Slice them. Just wash them good and slice them and bat them. And he's rind and all. I like them that way. And we started growing these little yellow straight necks. Boy, you go out and get them things, then you got to come in and wash them and wrap them and pack them. And one year, me and another boy had 7 acres of these little crooknecks, yellow crookneck squash. And they don't ever get to be large enough. It looks like it takes 1,000 of them to fill a bushel basket.
But they are tender.
They are tender, yeah. Anybody likes squash, I think that's about as good one as you can eat. Then we had the Butterball and the Table Queen or Dixie Queen. You let him go until he gets, well, just look at it, you wouldn't think it's fit to eat. He gets tough. And they, well, we always say to me, just cut them in half and get the seed out and put your seed in there, whatever you wanted. Nutmeg, vanilla, sugar, what. It was sweet to start off with. Put it in the oven and bake it, and then take your spoon and just dip it out and eat them. Like they, there's a dozen different ways you can fix them.
All good.
Yeah.
Except you don't like them just stewed.
That's right, I don't know. I can eat them, but I don't like them.
With seasoning? Yeah. With onions or garlic or things like that?
I don't want no garlic in nothing I eat.
Okay.
And a lot of people like it.
Yeah.
There's an old...
Onions?
Yeah. I eat onions pretty good. There's an old colored fellow had a blacksmith shop. There in the edge of making up out on the Rochelle Road. And I went in there one day for something. I smelled garlic. I didn't know much about it at the time. I asked him about it. He said, yeah. He said, we use it a lot. He said, go out there and give you 2 or 3 bunches of, I think it had little bulbs on it. He said, take it out there and throw it down somewhere. He said, you have garlic. And he had this world over there growing wild. And I got some and brought it here. And some got out there by our back steps. I don't know how it got there. But each year it'll come back. It looks like it's getting more and more.
Oh, really?
We don't ever use it.
Yeah. Nobody come gets it?
No.
What did he have around his shop?
He's just a old country blacksmith shop,
mm-hmm.
And the little shed house. I don't remember whether he shot horses or not, but he'd fix your wagon wheel or anything in the back, shrink tires, anything like that. Can you remember his name on that?
How do you shrink a tire?
Well, if it's loose on your rim, you take it off and cut about an inch off of it, and weld it back, and that makes it smaller than it. Yeah. I don't know whether they know they don't swell the rim. I don't know, but they got a way they get it over there, and it's just as tight as it can be.
Wasn't his first name George?
George something, I can't remember.
Probably Williams, was it?
I don't know. Might have been.
And he worked on wagons.
Mm-hmm. Buggies, carriages, anything. You know, way back, blacksmith was considered a, well, similar to a good mechanic now.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd fix plows, sharpen plows, point them. And
what'd they point them with?
And they'd weld a piece of metal on. For instance, if you had a sweep and the point was worn off, you'd take it to him and he'd put you another point on there and sharpen it. And they could set them. You know. Back here, used to use what they call a little twister plow. And they'd set that thing. This old fella down home, he was a part-time blacksmith. And somebody said he could set a twister where he couldn't plow close to the fence. They did it so he would dirt over the fence. Lordy. That old man went to a tree. Now, I can't tell you exactly how he did it, but it had, where the trunk went up, it had a root curved out. And he got his sawing axe and went there somehow and cut that chunk out and got the root. Came to the house and sawed it open and made a pair of plow handles out of it. But darned if you could hardly tell them from stove by the pineapples. It was the first time I'd ever seen it. Now they make, they used to make the old wooden cultivating plow stalk. And your beam would be wood. Then you'd have a piece that went down for your foot to work on. It'd come up and attach to your beam. Then your hammer was attached to your beam, and it'd come back and you had a cross piece that your hand was attached to there, where you, I don't know what you'd call foot, went down there, and it stuck way up to where your hand would come up, where you'd have it about waist high. And they'd apply just as good or better, and they'd make it out of the toughest kind of wood, especially that foot and beam.
Now say that again.
About the only.
Now that's a plow.
Yeah, a cultivating plow stove. They call them the new ones. They call them Georgia ratchets now, but that's old, homemade wood foot.
Wood foot.
Yeah.
Well, now that's way past me. I don't. I'm not saying wood foot.
The only iron would be about it. Would be a probably bolt that held your handles onto your beam. And your nut, your bolt that held your plow onto your foot, and then your clevis. It would work into the end of the beam that you put your single tree to.
Yeah.
That'd be the only iron that'd be about it.
Now you'd have iron on the foot.
Yeah.
The plow.
Your plow, yeah. But your foot where you bolted your plow onto would be wood.
Yeah.
And most of that would be good hickory or tough sweet gum or something.
And that'd hold pretty well?
Yeah. So, Henry Brown's daddy was the last one I saw was one. And I don't know what he ever did plow with any other kind for cultivate. Now, he had a little old boy Dixie or champion that he broke his land with. Little old one horse. And he had a bunch of children. He would tend from 30 to 40 acres of land each year.
Now this is Henry's daddy.
Yeah. With one horse. But he had about three or four whole hands. And he wouldn't plant it all at one time, see. He would spread it out. Say he'd plant a patch of corn early in February. Then either first of March and the last of March, and he wouldn't have to work it all at one time. He'd work one this week, one the next week. Always had a cotton patch and a big sweet potato patch and a garden, and he'd have collards a year round. Well, they raised their own hogs, had a cane patch to make their own syrup, have a milk cow. Get the milk and butter and chicken and get eggs. Well, there wasn't very little to buy. Every Saturday, you'd go to the crib and chuck and shell a bushel of corn and take it to the mill. Have it ground in half and half. That's the, you sift it and get your meal and take the other and wash it and get your grits.
Now say that again.
Have it ground in half and half. And when you got it home, you'd sift it, and the meal would come through your sifter.
I see.
And then the grits and the husk would stay in the sifter. Then you take that, and it takes a long time to wash it. But when you got it washed and cooked it, it didn't taste like this stuff you buy at the store. It was.
Well, why would you wash it?
To get the husk out.
Oh, I see.
And
you wouldn't just pitch it up and blow it.
No, you'd.
You'd
blow a lot of your grits away if you did that.
And wet it and keep shaking it
if
you wash it.
You wet your, when you started cleaning the husk away from your grits, you'd put in a pan or a pot and pour water on it, shake it, and the husk and stuff would come to the top.
Oh, I see.
Just keep washing it until you finally wouldn't have anything, but it's cracked corn, you know, but it's small.
You pull the husk on out.
Yeah, when you shook it up, pour your husk on.
Well, you wouldn't want to eat those husks.
No. fact, I don't think it would have much food value if he did eat it.
Yeah. It'd just be roughage.
Yeah. It'd be sort of like shorts.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you see, he gets started on these things, L9N, and it's just first rate, just beautiful. See, that's just as interesting as anything you can talk about. That's first rate. You know, it doesn't matter your subject, it's all like that. And, you know, you go along, and for a while you don't say much.
After they got it to where the women don't have to do nothing, you know, but go get them and throw them in a pot and put a little water and salt to it and cook it.
Yeah.
Tell them about how y'all used to get them.